Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today, Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, brings you another episode of Barron Talks.
Welcome to the Barron Talks podcast. I am Chancellor Ralph Ford. And in Barron Talks, we have discussions with interesting people in our community. And today it is my pleasure to have Dr. Greg Philbeck, director of the Sam and Irene Black School of Business. Welcome here, Greg.
Thank you very much.
Well, Greg, I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to read your bio and some of the great things that you've done, and you're just going to have to be patient while I do it. Dr. Greg Philbeck is director of the Black School of Business, where he is a professor of finance in the Samuel P. Black III Professor of Finance and Risk Management. To our listening audience, that means he is an endowed professor. And he has taught at the college here since 2006. Before joining us here at Barron, he served as a senior vice president of Kaplan Schweizer, where he was in charge of all content and curriculum. And we're going to have further discussions about what he did there. He's also held academic appointments at Miami University of Ohio and the University of Toledo, where he has served as associate director for the Center for Family Business. Greg holds a bachelor's in engineering physics from Murray State University and a doctor of business administration in finance from the University of Kentucky. He has authored or edited 14 books and published more than 100 refereed academic journal articles. It's an impressive record.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a bit about your path to Barron. What led you to this career in finance? How did you end up here?
So I was, as you mentioned, an engineering physics major undergraduate, and I'd always had an interest in business. I actually served as national vice president of a club for business students, Phi Beta Lambda, when I was in college. As many engineers often do, there was always consideration for an MBA. I went ahead and took the GMAT, applied to a few schools, and got a full scholarship to Vanderbilt University for the MBA program. So I entered that program, and I'd always had an interest in potentially pursuing a career in academia. I'd actually looked at physics PhD programs as an undergraduate. But once I got down to Vanderbilt, I started talking to some of the professors. A few of them indicated they thought finance would be a good fit for me. I started doing some exploration. I ended up contacting the University of Kentucky. I entered their doctoral program, and there I was. So basically, that was the path to finance. In terms of getting to Barron, I spent 10 years in academia, and then I spent 7 years after that as senior vice president of Kaplan Schweizer. Schweizer is the world's largest provider for review materials for many professional designations, including the Chartered Financial Analyst or CFA designation. And there were two faculty members at Barron who were doing some consulting work for Schweizer. One of them had contacted me and said that there was an endowed professorship that was open and they thought I'd be a perfect fit and that I should apply. And basically what the position was looking for was to bring somebody on to build a finance program at Barron. It had only been around for a couple of years at that point. And the focus was really on financial designations. So I came in 2006. I've loved every moment of it. It's been a great experience and I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're honored to have you here. And, you know, you have all of these different designations and exams. I'll say it's an alphabet soup, CFA, CAIA, FRM. Just tell us a little bit, what are some of these designations and why are they important?
So these are key industry designations in the field of finance. The CFA or Chartered Financial Analyst designation is actually the world's largest designation in business. There are 300,000 candidates in 165 countries that are taking one of the three levels of the CFA exam this year. Not only is it the largest, it's also the most prestigious. And the CFA exam is considered to be the most challenging designation in business and the third hardest professional credential of all professional credentials across all fields of study. So that is the kind of the big one. CAIA is the Chartered Alternative Investment Analyst designation. It's working in the area of alternative investments. FRM is the Financial Risk Manager designation. I also hold a couple of other certifications, designations. I have a certificate in performance measurement, which is another exam sequence through the CFA Institute, and I also hold a Professional Risk Manager designation as well.
Well, you'll have to excuse me if you hear, we're working from home in this pandemic and you might hear my dog barking in the background. We're just going to continue on with this. You know, the CFA, as you said, is very difficult. But many of our students graduate and they go on and they get that CFA designation. So could you just give me an idea, a graduate from Penn State Barron in finance, how many of them go on to get that designation right away?
So that's a great question. And first, let me just mention that Penn State Barron is what's known as a university affiliated partner with the CFA Institute. And with that comes the opportunity to offer scholarships that basically cover the costs associated with registration for the CFA exam. And college students that are in their last year of study can actually set for level one of the CFA exam. There are three levels associated with it. As a university partnership program representative, we are awarded scholarships based on the number of CFA charter holders that we have full time, adjuncts that we hire, the way our program is structured, and so forth. So we actually offer 17 scholarships to candidates for the level one of the CFA exam. And so we have 17 folks that are going to be taking it during this academic year. I actually lead a seminar course for them to help them prepare for that in the context of the curriculum, which is sort of like taking an undergraduate program in finance and putting it on steroids, making it a graduate program in terms of the type of coverage that takes place. Those 17 students, again, will be folks that might not have otherwise had pursued that so quickly. And we're one of a handful of programs in the state of Pennsylvania. And again, not to draw comparisons to other schools, but because we are so designation focused and our faculty are so credentialed, we offer 17, Pitt offers three, and University Park offers three. So we're able to do a lot as a smaller school that you would not ordinarily have expected. That CFA program then allows them to go on and continue post-graduation to be able to pursue on successive passes, level two and level three. And so we do have a very much an increasing body and network of our alumni that have successfully completed all three levels of the CFA designation. And it certainly shows in what they're doing from a professional standpoint. There was a compensation study that came out a couple of years ago from the CFA Institute showing with 7 years of experience in the CFA designation, average salaries were about $180,000 to $200,000. And for the folks with the same wow. amount of experience, but without the designation, about $115,000. So it makes a huge difference in their professional lives.
It's a tremendous difference. And it's one of the things I love about Barron is how we take the strong academic programs and then we build on top of a lot of these designations and experiences. The other thing I think that's worth talking about is the Bloomberg terminals. And we're one of the few schools in the area or region that has those. What having these Bloomberg terminals here on campus?
Yeah, so Bloomberg is really the icon of financial information and databases. And it's sort of so much more to Bloomberg, but we have gone over the last couple of years, we've gone from one terminal to 12 terminals, and it's made a huge difference for our academic programs. Previously, we had students waiting in line to be able to use the functionality of the Bloomberg terminal. By being able to add those additional terminals, we actually are able to use them not only in the classroom and make great use in our portfolio management class, for example, but we hold classes throughout the semester. And that is not just for business students, but that's across the entire campus. And we offer six different classes, hour-long classes. And I have two student assistants that run the terminal, and they basically lead those classes. So folks that have that experience as a part of their undergraduate program hit the ground running in many of our financial type positions they would be taking as a financial analyst or portfolio managers and so forth that otherwise they would have to be trained on. And it puts them at a competitive advantage for positions.
Well, you know, one of the things that's just astonishing is the lack of financial literacy of students when they graduate from school. And obviously they get that when they're here at Barron, but you are very passionate with this partnership through the CFA to promote financial literacy. What is it that you're trying to achieve through that initiative? Tell us a bit about it.
So the CFA Society of Pittsburgh has an international reputation for financial literacy education. We're currently working in about 400 high schools in eight states, actively engaging in programs to be able to help prepare high school students for better financial literacy. I got involved with the program because I served as the president of the CFA Society from 2014 to 2018. And our initiative really blew up around 2015 in terms of really expanding out there. To me, as I look at financial literacy and the role that we're playing in it, I say it's quite significant. I sat on an international task force. There's basically 12 of us that are looking to try to come up with ways to, on an international basis, increase financial literacy. In Western Pennsylvania, these efforts have been very, very important as we try to go in and basically work with high school students to teach them five broad concepts: risk diversification, compound interest, a better understanding of how credit works, numeracy, in other words, the ability to understand, if you will, a little bit of the financial mathematics, and the concepts of inflation as well. And so what we find is through our partnership programs, we're going into classrooms through the CFA Society Pittsburgh, but also locally and regionally with our students. We've got an army of students that are prepared to be able to work in these classroom environments to be able to deliver these type of educational programs. And with that, I think we're making a significant difference in a very, very vital area in society. So we're pleased to be a part of that. And because Barron has been at the forefront of that, we've basically been doing all the analytics for pre-post testing of these 400 high schools that are involved since 2015. We received a grant from the CFA Society of Pittsburgh. We've hired two interns, and we're expanding our reach in terms of what we're doing.
Yeah, and the army of students that you're talking about, those are Barron students, our current college students who are out there volunteering their time and working with high school students.
Absolutely. We have two very active organizations that are nationally recognized in the finance area, the Financial Management Association and the Financial Planning Association. And each year, volunteers from both of those organizations, and most recently, the Accounting Club, have volunteered their time to be available to work with high schools to be able to deliver this type of training. We have canned PowerPoint presentations, and we work with the students to make sure they're equipped to go out there. But it's not even just the high school students that are beneficiaries of this. We work with high school teachers as well. We've actually sent students out to help train some of the high school teachers in the area on principles of financial literacy.
Well, how do this high school students react to this? I mean, what's their, they've never heard of, risk and diversification of portfolios, and it sounds intimidating, but it's so important to understand.
Well, the presentation is really fun. So we try to connect them on things they can relate to, things such as a car purchase or an Xbox or something along those lines. And we talk about the difference in how they might select a lower price versus a higher priced car and what the impact of that is for them from a financial standpoint. We work through examples of decisions about going to perhaps a less expensive versus a more expensive university if they're going to go on to college life. So we try to meet them where, again, they are. And with that, we also use illustrations of, for example, sports heroes. Some have been very wise and have done great things financially, and others that squandered their resources away. So it's done in a very applied, very visually appealing sort of presentation that takes place. So I don't think that most students feel intimidated. In fact, most of them tend to be energized by it. And while some of these students come from households where there is discussion about financial matters, other places, the parents don't talk about what's going on financially. And quite frankly, in other places, there's a lack of understanding and knowledge on behalf of the adults in the household in which they live.
Well, let's go a little bit further into this idea of the cost of that lack of knowledge. It is great, right? I mean, if somebody doesn't have a basic understanding of consumer finance, they tend to make a lot of mistakes. They get interest, they get loans with high interest rates. They're more easily taken advantage of. And I mean, the costs become astronomical over a lifetime, don't they?
Absolutely. And it also is problematic because in the areas where we find the highest levels of financial, it's also the areas where we often see what we call banking deserts or locations in which there's no access to a financial institution. And so you often find folks trying to cash checks on the street with loan sharks and whatnot. So there's a lack of even understanding and knowledge about what the differences are there as well. And this just continues to build, obviously, over a lifetime. By some measures, 93% of United States citizens basically retire not financially equipped to be able to make it in a manner that would be acceptable in their retirement years.
Given that, why is it so hard to get financial literacy into the schools. I know you're doing a great job, but it seems so obvious that we could make this large impact on people's futures if we just change that.
So I think there's a number of reasons that have contributed to that. I think there's an assumption in society that the parents will have those discussions with their kids. And many times the parents are not equipped to be able to do that. Secondly, I think when you look at what happened starting with No Child Left Behind, there was a focus on certain topic areas and sort of doing well relative to a test of topics that had been identified and took out some of the creativity that would otherwise exist in a high school curriculum. And then on top of that, I think that you have high school teachers that are doing the absolute best they can to be able to meet all the other learning objectives that need to be accomplished from state mandates and so forth for high school, which makes it hard to be able to put in some of the extra pieces that I think are life skills that are essential to be able to function in their post-high school environment.
Yeah, and we hope through all of your efforts, you're able to change that equation, and you are. But let's talk about, a survey that you and Dr. Jessica Zhao did. You surveyed teachers in 53 states to try to get a sense of the state of financial literacy or understanding. What did you find?
So basically what we did is we developed a pre and post test, and we keep refining this each year. I've actually worked with a couple of honors students on their honors thesis, and we keep kind of expanding and, if you will, coming up with other types of research areas within this particular framework. But what we did is basically surveyed these teachers to get a baseline knowledge of how the students were doing prior to having some financial literacy training, and then post-exam, how they're doing as well. And of course, we're looking at a multitude of different issues from obviously their objective knowledge. Can they answer questions about the five topics that I discussed earlier? But how do they feel in terms of confidence? Or how many questions are they putting, I don't know, initially that they do know and feel comfortable answering at the end? And then just their subjective knowledge about how they feel about the type of knowledge that they have and whether they think it's solid or not. So what we're finding is really prior to these financial literacy campaigns, we find that male students and students that have higher GPAs tend to have better objective knowledge. We also find that there's a disconnect between actual and perceived financial knowledge and students that gain, again, across all aspects of the program. But what's really fascinating is that the categories with the lowest pre-scores, and particularly female students, actually show the greatest improvement in the post-survey results that we do. And students with lower GPAs, for example, tend to do better with respect to financial behavior and also with objective knowledge. And we find on the subjective side that actually higher GPA students improve their subjective knowledge through these programs. The other piece that we noted is that when you start looking at the districts in which these students are, the students that benefit most from these programs tend to be in poorer districts and in districts which have lower levels of college graduates. So again, it's a result that's very heartening in the fact that the folks that are struggling the most are the ones that tend to benefit the most from these programs.
That is really encouraging to hear. And those students, my guess is they've got to build some confidence first. There's patience. You've actually got to make some decisions with your finances. You have to see them pay off, and you have to see the result. So how do you work through that process with the students?
Well, I think part of it really comes down to the ability for them to be able to have some creative exercises to be able to kind of work through and get a better understanding of that. We developed with the CFA Pittsburgh a resource database that sets out on the website. It's open to anyone, but basically high school teachers can come out and see best practices from other high school teachers that have designed lessons related to financial literacy. So you go out on this website, you see something that looks interesting to you, and you can bring it into the classroom. So by having creative assignments and to make, if you will, financial literacy fun, which in my view, it really is fun, it makes it a much more desirable environment and students having more confidence. And obviously, especially with high school students, as they're starting to come into part-time jobs and so forth, they see immediately the related to having this knowledge.
So you really see high school is the place to introduce this versus, say, grade school or middle school.
So I think financial literacy at even early ages is very important. And a lot of the work, for example, that Junior Achievement does with the elementary school children, and they work through high school as well. But I think that those are great endeavors, and they make a huge difference, and they plant seeds. But what the research shows is that high school, of all points along the spectrum of life, is where you can have the most effect. That is the point in which they are developing those financial habits and patterns, which will take them throughout their entire life, and being able to couple those first job opportunities, first loans that they might be taking out for college, with a good, solid financial literacy education. It is across the board. The research shows that's when it's most effective. Still works for adults. We could work with adult learners, but the adult learners have basically, many have been set in their ways. And so it's more difficult to be able to have a big impact at that point than you might see with high school students, for example.
Well, you know, your programs, and my understanding is now they're now offered in over 400 high schools. And you've got a vision or a goal to create a center for financial literacy here at Barand. You talk through that.
Absolutely. So, you know, we do all this stuff informally up here, right, at Barand. We've been involved with this for over 5 years, very actively. We've had honors thesis where we've worked through with the research. We've had volunteers going out to area high schools. We've actually had the student coordinators from Penn State Barand have actually been the lead for all universities in Western Pennsylvania as we coordinate with the CFA Society of Pittsburgh, other college students. So the appointed leader has always come from Barand. And so we've done all this great work. And so what we'd like to do now with the development of a Center for Financial Literacy is to sort of formalize our operations and the ability to essentially create an infrastructure that goes beyond a volunteer army and basically puts additional organizational efforts in place and the ability for us to be able to further develop financial literacy materials that can be used in these high schools. So right now it's a lot of if you will, sweat labor taking place, an army of volunteers, and we just finished actually recording 3 videos that are now available through Penn State Barand's website. And they actually also reside on the CFA Society of Pittsburgh website. I think by creating a Center for Financial Literacy, we will give more prominence to the great work that we've been doing now for many years and to be able to extend and, if you will, formalize those operations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great goal. And actually, it's just about there. You've got all the pieces. Well, let's switch gears now. I'd like to talk about the Black School. The Black School of Business is the only business school in our region and beyond that is accredited by AACSB International. That is the premier accrediting agency for business education. So tell us a bit more about AACSB and why that is so important.
Well, Ralph, I think you just said it yourself. It is the gold standard of accreditation. 4.83% of business schools worldwide hold this accreditation. And so when you put that in actual numbers, there's about 16,500 business schools in the world, and about 800 of them are accredited by AACSB. It is a very challenging accreditation to be able to achieve. It certainly comes with lots of high promises and certainly with a lot of high goals and expectations. What AACSB is doing is making sure that programs have what we call faculty sufficiency. In other words, that faculty are credentialed educationally or professionally to be equipped to be doing what they're doing in the classroom. So they hold the terminal degrees. They have the educational background that is necessary to be able to carry out our work and mission. We also are held to the highest standards in terms of assurance of learning and continuous improvement. So basically, we are doing assessments almost continuously on our programs, on the classes, on the goals that we've established within the Black School of Business. And we report back out on those. And they are looking, in order to maintain that accreditation, with a continuing improvement. So it's not just enough to say, well, we're achieving 95% competency in this particular area. Well, if you're achieving 95% competency, it's time to ratchet it up a little bit and to reach higher. We also have with AACSB an assessment of how we're doing in terms of preparing students for careers, professional development. What are we doing to try to make a difference and get them set up for success in their post-college experiences? So we're very proud of this accreditation. We're the only school in the region of business schools in the region that actually hold this accreditation. And we work really hard. And the faculty in the Black School of Business, I think, are very excited and charged up. Certainly see this as an important mission for us to continue to maintain this through time.
Well, you know, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we have a few minutes, and there are two important things that we want to hear about, and I want our audience to hear about. One is the Interior Student Managed Fund, and the other are your Innovation Through Collaboration Project. So if you could walk us through both of those, they're real gems.
Sure, thank you. The Etruri Family Student Managed Fund actually sets at about $920,000 right now. These are funds that are actually managed by the students. They're overseen by a faculty member who teaches the portfolio management class, Dr. Tim Krause. But basically, the students do stock pitches. The students, as a class, vote on whether a particular security is going to be added or sold from the fund. And it gives them that practical real-world application. I mentioned Jean Natale a few minutes ago. Jean had the nicest thing to say about our students that I think I've heard any company executive say. He said, "Greg, your students are workforce ready. When they come out, they're ready to hit the ground working." And this is a perfect example of why. It's the whole concept of the open lab concept that's championed by Penn State Barron. We call it learning by doing, hands-on opportunities for learning. And it's amazing to watch these students, because when they have to work with real money and make decisions about the securities that are being held, they certainly put a lot more energy and effort into it, because there are real-world ramifications if they are unsuccessful. Once this fund hits $1 million, and we're getting very close, it's going to start kicking off scholarships so that students can be supported by the fruits of the labor associated with this fund. So we're very thrilled about that one. You also ask about the Innovation Through Collaboration, or ITC, projects. What a great opportunity for students and for companies to be able to have a win-win situation. With these ITC projects, basically we take a faculty lead and three students into an organization, and we try to help them solve a business problem. Now, this isn't a top tier problem, but it's a second tier problem that they just don't have the bandwidth to be able to get to. And so these students are brought in to be able to try to come up with a solution. And the projects are obviously defined to a point where they typically are going to last for a semester, no more than a year. We have some flexibility with that as we go forward. And ultimately, working very closely with this company, at the end of the process, the students are basically pitching a solution to whatever the problem was, and opportunities, obviously, for the company to react. This is a phenomenal experience for the students. And with that, we've had many internships and job offers that have come out, often with the companies in which these students have worked. And it's been a great way for us to be able to partner with our business community, not only in greater Erie County, but these projects are literally going on in all places outside of Erie as well.
You know, tremendous impact for our students, our faculty, and of course, the companies that they work with. Well, my guest today is Dr. Greg Philbeck, Director of the Black School of Business here at Penn State Barron. Greg, I will give you the last word. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
I would just say it's quite a pleasure to have been able to have the opportunity. I always love to be able to talk about the great work that's taking place in the Black School of Business. And I just would say, based on, you know, being in academic type environments for many decades, that I have never seen a place like Penn State Barron and the Black School of Business. The care and concern and the nurturing that takes place from an academic standpoint, and also from a professional and personal standpoint of our faculty towards our students, and watching the great success that these students have as they graduate and move through their careers. And having been here through 2006, many of them are moving into executive level positions now that I had in class, and they are so loyal. They are so loyal to Penn State Barron, and they want to help students coming out. So never do I run into an alumni or anything but enthusiastic about, tell me what I can do. I had such a great experience. I want to make that great experience for students that are coming out today. So my job is wonderful, and I love it. And I love working with our faculty and students in the Black School of Business.
Well, extremely well said. To our audience, you have been listening to Barron Talks. I am Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Barron, and it has been a pleasure to have Dr. Philbeck, Director of the Black School of Business. Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again on Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. for an encore presentation of Barron Talks with Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Barron.